This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
On Commons People this week, Theresa May's Brexit Plan B is just Plan A again.
What makes her think that what she tried to renegotiate in December will succeed in January? Yeah. Mr Speaker, this really does feel a bit like Groundhog Day.
But backbenchers have other ideas.
Yvette Cooper's amendment is suggesting that we delay Article 50 to the 31st of December 2019. I think that is a disaster.
And meanwhile, Parliament is finally dragged into the 21st century.
And I'm delighted, truly delighted, to be able to confirm to the House today that a substantive motion on proxy leave in the case of maternity, paternity and adoption has been tabled today.
Hello and welcome to Commons People. I'm Arj Singh. It feels like Westminster is taking a quick breather this week before the Brexit chaos begins again. Joining me to make sense of it all is desperate Paul Waugh.
Hi, Paul. Arj.
More on that later. We also have the man who wants to snog Theresa May, Tory Deputy Chairman James Cleverly.
Hello, mate.
Hi, James. Ned Simons is also back, partly to prove that we've managed a totally peaceful transition of hosting duties on the podcast.
I was hoping I wasn't going to be the Theresa May snogging person you're introducing. But
it's a smooth transition.
Yeah.
Hi, Ned.
Hello.
Much excitement this week over a backbench attempt to delay Brexit led by Yvette Cooper and a host of other amendments to the Prime Minister's Brexit strategy. We're now going to hear from Cabinet Minister Liam Fox, who's accused MPs of trying to steal Brexit from the people.
You've got a Leave population and a Remain Parliament. Parliament has not got the right to hijack the Brexit process because Parliament said to the people of this country, we make a contract with you, you will make the decision and we will honour it. What we are now getting are some of those who were always absolutely opposed to the result of the referendum trying to hijack Brexit and, in fact, steal the result from the people.
Paul, what's going on with these amendments? Are people like Yvette Cooper trying to steal Brexit?
Well, put it this way, after a 230 vote defeat, as James will probably concede, Number 10 decided, actually, something's got to change. So it's up to you guys. Can you tell us what you want? You told us what you don't want. Can you tell us what you want? And so MPs have tried to pick up that gauntlet, and Yvette Cooper and Nick Bowles, after various sort of permutations of the what was called the Bowles plan, is now the Cooper-Bowles plan, come up with this extraordinary sort of device, which is unprecedented, you've got to say, which is basically a bill to ram through in one day, a means to make sure that not the government but Parliament takes control of parliamentary business for one day and rams through a bill. And the bill will effectively say a no-deal Brexit is not possible if Parliament hasn't decided on something else by February 26. So that's it in a nutshell. It's an attempt to do two things. One, avoid no-deal Brexit, take it off the table, for which we think there might be a Commons majority. But secondly, also, to sort of give Parliament a bit more control to force the PM. Because all these amendments, as Number 10 have told us in the last 24 hours, that the thing about those amendments, and there's going to be more next week, the only one that distinguishes itself for being a troublemaker is Cooper Bowles, because it forces the PM to do something. Everything else is not binding. Now, it might be politically binding, but it's not legally binding. And Number 10 conceded to us, well, various sources conceded to us overnight and today, that actually, look, if this is why this matters, because it's going to change the game.
What are people in government saying about this, James?
Well, usual caveat, mine is a party appointment rather than a government appointment, so I'm not a minister. But I do talk to colleagues both in government and backbenchers, and a lot of people are really, really concerned about this amendment on a number of levels. One, because it is self-evidently not about delaying or whatever, it's about stopping Brexit. basically. It's about stopping Brexit. And anyone who's unsure of that, the fact that the Lord's end of this process is being championed by Lord Adonis, who has been admirably clear and relentless and obsessive about his desire to prevent Brexit, I think is a real indicator that what this is about stopping Brexit. But more than that, it introduces a level of constitutional vandalism, which I think is really, really bad news. The way Parliament has worked has evolved successfully. It's the longest and most successful democracy in the world, and it has changed through evolution. And what this could do is, in a desire to address a very important but short-term issue, it's going to smash up centuries of evolved parliamentary procedure. And unleash a whole load of unknowns in terms of what might happen in the relationship between the Commons, between the legislature and the executive. I'm really very uncomfortable with it, not because of what the implications for Brexit, although I'm uncomfortable with that, but just more generally because it's just really bad practice, really bad practice.
And Ned, Jacob Rees-Mogg had a helpful suggestion, actually, for the government to try and get around this, didn't he?
Yeah, he suggested that they just shut Parliament down, prorogue it early, stop anything else going through. You on board with that, James? Is that a good idea?
I make my broader point that when you start using really big procedural hammers to crack the various nuts that are being presented, you start getting into really, really difficult places. There is a really easy way, and I say this to all my colleagues, there's a really, really easy way of resolving this. For people who want to give time for business, for people who want to make sure Brexit happens, there's a really, really simple way of doing that. That's vote for the bloody deal. Vote for the deal, and all these problems go away, and then we can get on with the other, you know, really important stuff, like keeping the economic growth going, keeping the wage growth going, dealing with, you know, the NHS and education. All this, you know, remember that stuff? Ned, you're too young. But there was a time when that was the really important stuff that politicians obsessed about, and rightly so. And we're doing so much good work. I mean, part of my job as deputy chairman of the party is a sales job. It's to remind our activists and members about all the work that we're doing, and we are doing so much fantastic work. I would say that, wouldn't I?
You would.
But we are doing.
You
really
had some good job
work.
Figures this week.
We've got some fantastic job figures and wage growth. The stuff that's going through about, you know, high quality 2-year degrees and apprenticeships and NHS investment, all that kind of good stuff. We are doing it, but my God, trying to get it into the public consciousness is like pulling teeth, because understandably people are obsessing about Brexit.
Well, the public are as well.
I mean the public.
But James, isn't the other really, really easy way out of this, to use your phrase, is to get MPs and the government to back the Morrison Amendment, which has appeared on the order paper, which gives a way out for you amongst the Brexiteers and amongst the DUP of saying, look, we have a firm sunset clause on this thing called a Northern Irish backstop. Isn't that really where you should be heading? And you should be saying it a bit more proactively, that actually we're attracted to, is the phrase used by Whitehall sources today, we're attracted to the amendment. Shouldn't you be saying that publicly as well?
Well, look, the broader point that we've always made, a number of us have been making it, is that the easy thing to do is to say what you don't like. And you will have heard us say this so many times. It's really easy to point at things saying, don't like that, don't like that, don't like that, don't like that. But eventually we have got to come to a point where we agree on something. Andrew's amendment could be a route to that. Of course, it's not binding on the EU. So it'll give you ammo to go to the EU. Yeah, quite possibly. And we'll see. The way that this process is working is it moves very, very fast. There are constant amendments, constant changes. Amendments are put down, amendments are withdrawn. And we'll see how it plays out. But I do think that as a parliament, we need to grow up and we need to recognise that the British people expect us to deal with this. This is why I'm so against a second referendum, because I think the message that underpins British politicians saying, oh, it's all a bit too difficult and we can't decide, so we're just going to not bother and ask you, the people, to dig us out of a hole of our own making, I think is untenable. quite rightly, people are saying, hang on a second, that is literally what you are paid to do. Your job is to decide stuff like this.
But
and when it really matters, you go, oh, it's a bit difficult. Can you do my homework for me?
But that brings us back to Cooper. I mean, there is a suggestion from some of your colleagues, which you may agree with, which is that one of the big problems with Cooper is it's constitutional vandalism. It's a massive change in the way we work. And its drawback, from her point of view, is it doesn't have to just go through the Commons in one day. It's got to go through the Lords. And the Lords, you can't guillotine debate, whereas you can in the Commons. So it'd be, it's surely, what do you think about this idea that there may be some Tory Brexiteer peers who actually might want to talk for quite a long time and talk out this bill? Would that be something that you can see happening?
Look, potentially, all kinds of things can happen. And this is the point I was making about when you try and overnight smash up centuries of evolved practice, there are, it's like making a more complicated tax regime, for example. Clever people take your increasingly complicated tax regime and find loopholes in it. And the more complicated you make it, the more loopholes there are. And this will have loopholes. And I'm quite sure that that Yvette Cooper hasn't thought of them all. Other people may well do. And those loopholes, and they are inevitable, because there are always loopholes in everything, will be exploited. And so it might not even address the things. And as I say,
You've been down to the Lords. I remember once you famously went down the Lords' End from the Commons just to watch what was going on Brexit, to keep an eye on Piers. Do you fancy going up there on that day when this is going through the Lords and sort of smiling at some of your Brexiteer colleagues as they filibuster?
I don't think this is the right way forward at all. And I don't want to see things filibustered. I don't like...
But it could happen. It could be good for you, couldn't it?
All kinds of things could happen, Paul. I mean, that is the point. All kinds of things could happen.
Yeah.
Isn't the whole point here, though, and why this might be happening, it's because we've got a hung parliament. So if MPs are kind of inhibiting the government's ability to govern properly, surely it's time for a general election. I've heard that senior figures in the Conservative Party are talking about that now. Can you see an election happening, James?
We don't want a general election. I don't think a general election would resolve things because the split isn't on party line. I had the opportunity to wave a magic wand. We skip all the kind of messy actually getting votes and that kind of stuff. We just jump straight to us having, 30-40 seat majority. Well, it's entirely feasible. There'd still be a range of opinions, even in a majority government, on this particular issue. We'd be in the same place we are now, which is having to, as I say, grow up, grasp the nettle, and vote through a set of proposals which work, even if they're not exactly 100% what we personally would have put forward. And I don't think having an extra 20, 30 or 40 MPs for one party or another would automatically resolve this issue. So, I feel strongly that a general election is not a way out. And again, it's like a delay to Article 50. It's like all these kind of very procedural amendments. If it's, for some people, it's just a way of kicking the can down the road so they don't have to make any difficult decisions. And as I say, our job is to make difficult decisions.
Are you ready, though? Have you got enough money?
Born ready, mate.
You got people in
check
place?
Check out these guns. Yay. We're born ready.
You're ready to go anytime?
Look, we fight elections every year now. I mean, this is a big thing. We fight big elections every year. So if it's if it's not local government elections, which really matter, it's city mayoral elections, it's police and crime commissioner elections, it's devolved government. We fight elections all the time. I'm not giving away state secrets to say nobody wants a general election. As I say, I'm not even sure it would resolve anything, but we are always ready.
Right.
Just one more on this. Talking about delaying Article 50 a lot. Paul, when you asked Number 10 about this, in a lobby briefing, you were called desperate, which is pretty extraordinary. But it then transpires that it looks like the government may have to delay Article 50.
Well, exactly. What happened after PMQs, anyway? Just to fill James in here, is that after PMQs, we have a little briefing with the Prime Minister's spokesman every week, and you sort of tease out a few more details of what the PM did and didn't mean and what's next on the agenda. So it was inevitable that, given that the Cooper amendment was in the air, that we asked about that. And what was interesting was the Number 10 spokesman said that actually, at its heart, Cooper's amendment was an attempt to significantly delay Article 50, a significant extend Article 50. So all of us, our ears pricked up significantly. Well, that, are you suggesting that somehow an insignificant delay might be okay, like a few weeks rather than a few months? And so I asked the question, and Number 10 supporters got so upset. He said, well, I think that's a very, very desperate interpretation of what I've said. But everybody else then, and then I immediately said, well, it's a desperate reply to a proper question. And apart from the bants that goes on there, what's interesting is actually that Number 10 overnight have been making absolutely clear that actually if Cooper goes ahead and they may not have any choice, then now short extension to Article 50 may happen. More importantly, a government minister told me off the record, a technical extension is not out of the question at all, because a technical extension means we might get the deal done, a meaningful vote done, but we're simply running out of road to get the legislation through. So we could go to the EU and the EU would say, yeah, all right, we'll give you a few more weeks. You could technically extend it.
Number 10 owned there. Well done, Paul.
Well, we hope so, but I'm sure James would never agree with that.
Just to get outside the Westminster bubble, but stay on Brexit. This week, Sony said it is moving its European headquarters to the Netherlands due to Brexit. Airbus branded the government's handling of Brexit a disgrace. And to top it all off, the inventor Sir James Dyson, who actually backed Leave, is moving his head office to Singapore. And here is the Airbus CEO, Tom Enders, urging people not to listen to the Brexiteer madness about the merits of no deal.
Please don't listen to the Brexiteer's madness, which asserts that because we have huge plans here, we will not move and we will always be here. They are wrong.
James, the business minister, Richard Harrington, has called the comments from the Airbus CEO a disaster today. Do you agree?
You never want to hear, you know, people talk about moving some of their business, any of their business out of the UK. It is worth me saying that those messages are being counterbalanced by record levels of direct foreign investment in the UK. So you have to see, to a large extent, I mean, businesses move. International businesses flow and they relocate, they shift emphasis. It is part of what happens. Inevitably, because Brexit is the backdrop against which everything else is projected, that when businesses do that, everyone's going to go, oh, it's because of Brexit, or oh, it's despite Brexit. But this is what happens. But as I say, it's never good news hearing comments where serious and credible business leaders are saying bad things about, you know, the UK business environment, even when they are counterbalanced by other positive voices and billions flowing inwards into the UK economy. But we have to do something about it. And I would say this, wouldn't I? There is a way of taking that uncertainty off the table, of making sure that we reinforce and amplify our credentials as the best place in the world to do business, and that's to vote for the deal. And then we can get on with all that other stuff, because these decisions have not been implemented yet. People are talking about what they may well do in the future. We can deal with that. We can keep that money, those people, those jobs in the UK, and we could do it within days. Within a few weeks.
But Richard Harrington was interesting because the one thing he said that went quite to the extreme of this was he said he was delighted by the Airbus CEO's remarks. Delighted. And he basically was kind of almost goading the PM to fire him, because he said, actually, I may get fired for this, but, you know, I'm sure you've seen the quotes, James, haven't you? what do you think of your colleague Richard Harrington this morning? Is he just being Mr. Honest, Mr. Candid?
We're all honest and candid in politics, Paul, all the time. Why are you laughing?
I wish that were true.
I remember at one point Richard Harrington was touted in a report somewhere as a possible Trojan horse, sort of stalking horse candidate for the leadership. But anyway,
Can I just say, anyone that uses the phrase stalking horse about the Conservative leadership and then goes on to claim they understand anything about Conservative politics deserves to get ridiculed beyond
the old rules.
The old rules, which have not been in place literally for decades. But and apparently you also have to wear a monocle and a top hat and arrive in your
You can tell he's briefing those stories, can't you, by how old the rules are.
There will be increasingly now a whole sequence of events which focuses minds. And perhaps that is no bad thing. And perhaps that's what the point that Richard was saying, is that we politicians make decisions. And when we make decisions, they have real-world consequences. They have consequences to British businesses, to people's jobs, to people's homes and livelihoods and education. That is the responsibility that we hold. This is not a debating society. At the end of our debates and at the end of our votes, we don't all just, you know, retire to the common room and pat each other on the back for that terribly clever phraseology or that terribly clever put that. People's lives change. We attempt to make decisions to change people's lives for the better. And if ever we forget that our overriding responsibility is to make this country a better place, then we probably do deserve a slap. And I think the point that Richard was making is when someone makes comments as unambiguous as those, we really ought to listen. Not necessarily agree, but we absolutely have to listen, and we have to make sure our actions are taken and the decisions are taken with the full knowledge that there are real-world implications.
But it's interesting, this, isn't it? Because businesses have been warning about the impact of Brexit for, you know, years now, since before the referendum, but it doesn't seem to have made much difference among the opinions on the Tory backbenches.
But also amongst the public. A lot of Leave voters, even in areas where jobs may go, like the North East, you know, they're threatened with Nissan going or wherever. A lot of the Leave voters, actually, it's water for ducks' back. They've heard it a lot. You see the Vox Pops where they say, yeah, it might affect me, but, you know, I still want to bloody leave. And so that is fascinating, and I think that's what some MPs in Parliament are actually trying to represent when they say, look, you know, no deal actually has a clean Brexit, has quite a bit of public support. So, I mean, that's the thing that PM's got to handle in the next few weeks, of course.
Yeah. Right, let's move on from Brexit.
Is there anything else?
Yes.
Is there anything else? Exactly.
A parliamentary first this week, or, well, could possibly begin next week. So ministers are finally backing moves to allow proxy voting in the Commons. This comes after the Labour MP, Tulip Sadiq, delayed the caesarean birth of her son so she could turn up in a wheelchair and vote on the Brexit deal last week, which is seemingly ridiculous. Well, amazing from her, but ridiculous that she had to do that. Anyway, here's a clip of Jo Swinson, who's been at the forefront of this battle, asking an urgent question on the issue in the Commons.
It is shameful, Mr. Speaker, that last week the Honourable Member for Hampstead and Kilburn was put in the invidious position of having to try to make a choice between potential health risks to her baby and whether or not her constituents could have their voice heard on the biggest issue of our time. And nobody should be put into that kind of position.
Ned, you were watching this urgent question. Mm. What happened and how did this long overdue change?
Yeah, so essentially on Monday, MPs will be asked to approve the change, which we'll see. So if you've just had a baby, whether you're a man or a woman, so if you're maternity leave or paternity leave, or just adopted, you get to have another MP vote on your behalf. So you still get your vote recorded, but you don't actually have to physically travel down. And actually, in that urgent question, there was lots of really interesting contributions from female MPs talking about the difficulties of being a new mum and having to travel down, particularly if you're from far away. There was one pointing out, you know, she had to come down to Parliament with her baby, vote, go all the way back, was home by midnight, and then received a phone call from the whips, you have to come back tomorrow morning again. That's, you know, that just can't be a good way to run things. And the importance of their vote being recorded is that a lot of MPs, if they didn't vote, would then get kind of attacked in the press for, oh, why didn't you turn up? Why didn't you make your voice heard? So it means they will have their opinion recorded, which is only a good thing. I mean, I think it's obviously overdue, isn't it, James? I mean, what's your view on the change?
I think the nature of Parliament is changing and evolving. So parliamentarians are getting younger. Thankfully, finally, we're getting to the stage where the balance of male and female MPs is at least starting to reflect the balance in society as a whole. These are all fantastically good things, and Parliament has got to change the way it works to recognise the fact that its membership is also changing. The reason that sometimes things which outside of Parliament people go, well, God, this is just self-evidently simple, there are times when it's not always quite as simple as that because of the weird nature of what our votes mean and how our votes happen. I think that the idea of just saying, oh, we can do proxy voting or electronic voting or whatever, that might seem perfectly sensible externally, is not quite as clear cut as that. We do live weird lives as members of Parliament, and we have fantastic privileges. For example, you don't have like maternity pay. You don't drop down to statutory maternity pay. You're paid full salary. And as we've seen with the honourable member for Sheffield Hallam, you can basically take a year off on full pay.
How did you slip that?
No one else gets that kind of privilege.
So do you have concerns about proxy voting then? Are you worried about some impacts?
I don't think it's as simple as just saying, oh, it should happen and it will happen like this and boom, that's it. So we do have to make sure that Parliament is and is seen to be a good place for MPs with families. I think that's really important, and this is part of that process. But if sometimes people feel frustrated that we're not just saying, oh, right, let's do it and we'll have it on Monday and that's it, and that we are kind of chewing this over at what seems to be an incredibly slow pace, there is a reason for that, because our job's not like any other job. I'm not saying it's harder, it's just different. And so I'm glad that we are looking seriously at this. I think we should also look seriously at making sure that that things like the whipping system is sensible, because that, I understand Tulip's passion about this. She's very, very passionate about Brexit. I understand why she wanted to vote. But you look at the maths, no one really thought that the success or otherwise of that vote was going to hinge on her being there or not. But her view was she wanted to register her vote. I totally get that. I respect that. And I just think there's probably a basket of things that we could and should look at, proxy voting being in that basket.
She was often a pair as well, which the Speaker admitted.
Yep.
The thing is that Labour whip said, well, we couldn't trust the government to break it, which is
rubbish.
A classic sort of example of how sort of relations have broken down. Normally, there wouldn't be that kind of stuff. But we're back in the 1970s, aren't we? The hung parliament, as Arj mentioned earlier. That's the context of all this. So every vote matters. Even if it's a vote where actually there's a massive majority against, every vote matters. And what I thought was really interesting was Tulip Sadiq saying yesterday how she praised the Prime Minister for coming up to her on the day of that meaningful vote and taking the time to come up to her while she was in a wheelchair and check out how she was and showed a genuine human interest in how she was doing, as did Andrea Leadsom. And I thought that was a rare glimmer of actually, cross-party, genuine interaction. And we don't see it often enough.
There are things, and making Parliament a credible option for professional women, or a credible profession for women, transcends party politics. He says, before going on to remind everyone that we're on our second female prime minister. So, but it matters. It matters that actually, after centuries of having parliament and a century of having women having the right to vote and having the right to stand, we are still only on our second female prime minister.
Yeah.
And we do all collectively, cross-party, we've got to get a grip of that.
And you're a long way as a party from having equal number of men and women MPs, let's be honest.
Yeah,
the Tories
yeah,
are
absolutely, absolutely.
Way behind.
Full disclosure here, we are four blokes in this room.
Yeah,
talking
Rachel's
about this.
Outside working
but
on
I mean,
the story.
I mean,
and Jasmine.
Paul, James, you've got a family.
Yeah.
You know, this doesn't just apply to women, does it?
No, and it's one of these things where you do make sacrifices. And it's like a lot of jobs, particularly now in the modern world of work. Some of the old structures, some of the old support structures that you'd get in, perhaps join as an apprentice and retire with a gold watch after, 40 years of service kind of working environment, as that changes, and it changes really, really quickly, some of the traditional structures that supported family life and that kind of stuff are breaking away. It does affect us as parliamentarians, but it also affects loads of other different people in the world of work. And we've got to get our heads around it in terms of where we work, and at the same time, we've also got to get heads around it in terms of the implications for, the expansion of, part-time working, contract working, digital working, working from home, etc., etc. And it's all happening very, very quickly. So we're living it and trying to legislate it for it at the same time. It's not easy, but sometimes actually having these, this a rude awakening for us on our home turf is a really good reminder that some of the challenges that we're trying to thrash out for ourselves are exactly the challenges that other people are living through every day.
Yeah, interesting. Right, let's move on. It's time for the quiz.
The quiz.
The quiz.
And given these moves on proxy voting, I thought I would ask you all about parliamentary first.
Oh, hang on. Am I involved as well?
You are involved, James.
Man.
Yes.
Yeah, don't worry. It's not.
Oh, no.
I'm the quiz master. You're the contestant.
You're good at this.
Paul,
I'm not. I've always done this when I've listened to the podcast, and I've always got all of them wrong.
Well, I've been doing it for quite a few weeks, and I've got to actually show myself up that I'm doing.
Does Paul just win every week? That's the impression I get.
No, not at all. Last week was very unusual.
And Nikki Da Costa won a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, she did. Anand often wins.
Yeah. Okay, so what came first with bonus points for naming the year?
Oh,
hopefully
God.
This will work. So what came first? MPs no longer having to wear top hats to raise points of order, or the common speaker no longer wearing a wig?
Ooh, that's really good.
I think the top hat thing was like 2001 when that ended.
Really?
I remember watching a video of, I think it was...
I remember seeing it. Yeah. It certainly happened in my time.
I know this one. I know the order, but I'm not sure of the years.
I think because when Burko was the first to stop wearing a wig, wasn't he?
No.
Was he not?
No.
Oh, no, Betty.
Betty Boothroyd.
Betty.
He stopped wearing he stopped
wearing the gown.
It was Betty, so it must be Betty before top hat.
Yeah. So the wig went before top hat. So I'm pretty sure I've seen a video of an MP raising a point of order.
But this is where I am going to play
my joker. Ooh. Because you only have to wear the top hat to raise a point of order if you're raising the point of order during a division.
Ooh. Nice knowledge.
Do you still have to do that?
No, not anymore.
But it's
only very recently gone.
I've seen it happen, so I think it is relatively recent, that.
Each of your answers in turn, please. I think you've kind of collaboratively.
James said it first, but I'm going to definitely, yeah. It was the wig before the top hat.
Wig before top hat.
Get in.
Yeah,
give us the dates.
It was tradition for the speaker to wear a wig until 1992, when Betty Boothroyd, the first female speaker as well, decided not to wear one. And the top hats were abolished in 1998.
So
well done.
My first
everyone.
Year in Parliament, definitely.
What came first? Next question. What came first? An MP carrying a baby through the voting lobbies, or MPs no longer having to wear ties in the chamber?
I remember Helene Hayman in the 1970s. I'm pretty sure she took a young baby through the lobby during a key vote in the Callaghan government. I might be wrong about that.
Okay.
But if that's the case, then it definitely wins hands down because Frankie Maud and co, you know, Mr. No Tie.
Like, Before
No Ties, again, the Honourable Member for Sheffield Hallam triggered Speaker Burko saying we no longer need to wear ties. And I think he's hardly turned up in the chamber since. So now... he set the precedent, which he himself is not enjoying. So I think the ties is very recent. I'm guessing ties is 2017.
You don't like this tie rule, do you?
James is wearing a tie now.
James is wearing a nice tie.
It's a nice green tie.
The rest of us are
blue.
I was going to come in dinner jacket, you know, because of my radio appearances.
Yeah,
but because I think it's a sign of respect to your constituents.
Baloney.
I
think it's baloney.
That is a personal thing for me. But I'm very conscious that when I did constituency stuff, I would quite often wear slightly more casual stuff to fit. And I'd turn up to things. And you forget
that's true, that when
your MP comes to visit your charity or your work, it's a thing. And people were wearing suits because I was coming. And I'd turn up with an open neck shirt and I'd think, oh. Oops.
Yeah, I get that.
So for me, I think it's one of these things where as a sign that I take the job that you've given me seriously and I'm going to dress accordingly.
I have a rule, actually, which you probably won't like, which is backbenchers, no tie if I'm meeting them. Ministers, probably put a tie.
And is it a top hat for the Prime Minister?
White tie for the Prime Minister.
Go on, what's the answer then? Come on, actually, Ned's got to give his answer.
I reckon it's baby first, then tie.
James?
Yeah, baby first, then tie.
Yeah, definitely.
Paul. Well, I didn't know about Paul's example, but it's the correct answer anyway. I was thinking of Duncan Hames, the Lib Dem MP.
I think it's
carrying his and Joe Swinson's baby through the voting lobbies in 2014.
Paul always questions the basis of the quiz.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
It's just because I'm old.
The tie rule was relaxed in 2017, so Either way,
humbug.
It's correct.
But Speaker still insists on us wearing bloody jackets in the summer.
Yeah.
In the press gallery. And even if it's sweltering, sometimes he suspends it.
That got relaxed in this summer's outrageous heatwave, didn't it?
Did it get relaxed?
Yeah.
Maybe one day.
Yeah.
Anyway, he loves us to see us suffer.
MPs have to still wear jackets, don't they, in the chamber during...
Male MPs,
obviously. Yeah. Anyway, final first. So, what came first? The election of a black MP or House of Commons proceedings being televised?
Oh, that's really good.
Oh, that's a good one.
So they were televised. When were they televised?
That's a really easy one. I think it's an unbelievably easy one.
I think it's black MP first, then
black
TV.
MP first.
Oh, yeah, because it's a long time ago.
About a century.
Yeah, a long time ago. It was a Tory, wasn't it? First black MP was a Tory, wasn't it? I think.
Yes.
Are you talking about the
If we're
Indian.
Using black as in like Operation
Yeah, the
black
Indian guy.
I wasn't counting him.
Right. Okay.
I would count him as Asian.
So there was a little, funnily enough, there was a little flurry of, as we now describe as BAME MPs, like over a century ago. And then it just stopped. There was this massive hiatus. And then you had the trailblazers, Diane Burney and Paul Botang. So I'm guessing that's what you're thinking about. So it was I think it was televised.
It's the 80s, isn't it, we're talking about?
It's either late 70s or... So was Thatcher...
I think it's the 80s.
79, I think early 80s.
And Burney & Co. came in, what, 83? Oh, it's a tough one.
I reckon
one.
It's television before
TV
black
first.
MPs.
I'm going to say TV first.
Ned?
I'm going to stick with my first answer, which was black MPs, then TV, just to...
Ned's got that right.
Whoa!
Oh.
So Bernie Grant, Diane Abbott and Paul Boteng were all elected in 1987.
87?
House of Commons proceedings weren't televised until 1989.
Ooh, wow. The end of Thatcher. I suppose that makes sense, yeah. Wow. There you go. That'll teach me for, you know, siding with James.
I think Ned's won the quiz.
Yeah.
Well done, Ned. Right.
I don't know how that happened.
It's biased. Yeah, it's biased. It's like a Fiona Bruce style bias.
Who's Fiona
Let's
Bruce?
Not
me
go
or
there.
I?
Who is Fiona Bruce? Let's not go there. that's all we got time for. Just to finish off, here's a clip of the Northern Powerhouse Minister Jake Berry basically asking for the sack by admitting he does not enjoy Greg sausage rolls. Thanks for listening.
It's a great privilege to have the opportunity to appear before you this evening. I don't think you will be able to get a sausage roll, vegan or not, between my and the Honourable Member for Blythe Valley's ambition for his constituency. I will self-declare I am not taking part in Veganuary. I am not a vegan the vegan equivalent of an evangelist, but I have tried a Greg's vegan sausage roll, and it tasted to me much like any other Greg's vegan sausage roll, or Greg's sausage roll, i.e. not very nice.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.